Rolling. Hello there, Zach and Andy, back for another episode of the A to Z No BS podcast. And as you may or may not hear, we're back out in the wild.
Over at East Nashville Beer Works.
The old stomping grounds.
The old stomping grounds. Well, it's a gorgeous day, so why would we not be out?
We would not. I won't even go over the reasons why we wouldn't be out, because at this point, it's a moot point.
Right. So we're out and about. We're in public.
We're out and about, yeah. So if you hear some great 90s music in the backgrounds.
Yeah, or some babies, because there's a lot of small children here.
Or dogs.
Or dogs. Apparently there's going to be a comedy show at 7:30. I've been told. Or, I'm not going to stay.
Or car alarms. There's all kinds of bonus material.
Right. If there's a siren, an ambulance that, and you're listening to this in your car right now, it might be real. It might be us. I don't know.
You'll have to stay tuned.
Just check all your mirrors.
Some good life advice. So all that to say, it's the first Monday, probably in a long time, where it's just plain nice outside. I almost thought about wearing long pants, for that matter.
I think you'd be a little toasty.
Yeah, Andy would scoff at the idea of wearing long pants.
Yeah.
Pretty much any time.
You told me, September 12th? You told me on Saturday, September 10th, you were like, oh, short season is over. I was like, what are you talking about? It's definitely not over.
Short season is a state of mind.
Short season is over when I say it's over.
Fair. So all this to say, even with our new mic setup, I think background noise will be minimized, but you know, it's a podcast. You get what you pay for.
Yeah, which is nothing.
Just to clarify.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Well, we are drinking some good beers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've got, we're at East Nashville Beer Works. You've got the Cumberland Punch right now.
Uh-huh.
And the August Fest on deck. That's right. He's got two beers in front of him.
That's right. We're planning things out. We're in it for the long haul here.
I got the Lotto, which is a Pilsner. Although it does look a little hazy for a Pilsner. But
yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Technically, it's a Pils, apparently. So it's good.
Yeah.
And advantages of hanging out with Andy at East Nashville Beer Works is that the staff thinks that I'm part of their beer club. So I get an extra 4-ounce pour every single time I go to the bar. I am not, in fact, a part of their beer club. But they think I am. So they give me the extra 4-ounce, the bigger glass. And because I bought Zach's beer, he also got a bigger glass.
I was going to say, you might want to keep that down. You might want to keep that under wraps.
I don't think the staff here is listening to our podcast.
You don't think they're subscribers?
I'm not so sure, but I have told them.
You never know.
I tell them. They're like, wait, are you part of the club? And I'm like, no, but I just tip extra well when you guys do this for me.
I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, I think they probably know that. It's probably an economic decision.
Yeah.
They probably crunch the numbers and realize you'll actually pay more just in tips.
Yeah. So they benefit.
Yeah.
They personally benefit.
That's actually brilliant.
And I mean, if we're going to be honest, is the extra 4 ounces costing the business that much more money?
I don't know, bro. I don't know the economics
My best guess is that the extra 4 ounces probably cost, I would imagine it costs them less than 5 cents.
Sure. Per pour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be surprised if it cost more than that.
Now, the advantages of hanging out with Zach on a day where he goes to the wrong grocery store.
That's true. You brought me cookies.
Is you get a box of chocolate chip cookies. Christie's. So, Christie's gourmet cookies.
Yeah, not just any cookies. Not just like store-bought Kroger cookies. Christie's cookies. Megan is going to shit a brick when I bring those home later.
A Nashville favorite.
Yeah.
Christie's cookies. And for those who have been following for a long time, you may remember the workshop that I did several years ago called Kettlebells and Cookies, which was a charity event sponsored by Christie's Cookies, where I put on a kettlebell seminar at training camp in downtown Nashville. And oh, yeah. Christie's Cookies provided like 100 cookies for everybody.
Wow.
Yeah, and they partner with the Monroe Children's Hospital. So all of our ticket proceeds went to them.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cool event.
Yeah. So ever since then, I've had a soft spot in my heart and my tummy for Christie's Cookies.
Such a kooky guy.
Believe that. So, moving on to listener Q&A.
Oh. And by listener Q&A, you mean Instagram Q&A.
Listener, subscriber, follower.
Ankle mobility.
Ankle mobility is what we're leading off with. Do you do it? How do you do it? What are your thoughts?
The quick and dirty version of this is, do I do it? No. How do I do it? Not at all. And what are my thoughts? I don't think about it at all.
And done.
Episode.
Thanks for listening.
Now, I'm going to give you the floor on this one because my version of this is very simple. I don't find that working on ankle mobility for most of my people, most of the time, is a good use of our time, mm-hmm. right? Most of my people see me 1-2 times a week, maybe 3. They've got goals that are not ankle mobility related. So instead of focusing on their ankle mobility when all they really want to do is look good naked, it just doesn't seem like a good use of my time. So instead, I'm a big proponent of like squat wedges. So like if ankle mobility becomes an issue, I use metal plate squat wedges. I own a pair of 10 degree. I'm about to buy a pair of 20 degree, probably sometime this month. So if ankle mobility is a limiting factor in a squat variation, I just wedge my people up and just grip and rip.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't work on ankle mobility. I don't harp on it. I don't care. If I can wedge somebody's feet and it makes their squat look better, feel better, and they can grip and rip, then that's what we're doing. So that's where my thoughts start and end on ankle mobility.
All right.
Zach, I'm going to give you the floor on this one.
Thank you, sir.
You also have a giant audience, and a lot of people want to know your thoughts on this one.
Hey, that's why I have a podcast, man. I really like your squat wedges that you have at your gym. Those are really nice. So you say that the pair that you have now are 10 degrees?
10 degree.
I would have guessed even more because they really seem to make a big difference. So I would have thought they were even steeper.
I say 10 degree because that's what they're labeled as.
Right.
But I haven't taken my protractor to them.
Okay.
Because truthfully, now that you're saying it out loud, let me double check. I think they're 10, but they could be 15.
Okay.
And the reason that I'm thinking that out loud is because when I went to buy them, I think they offered 10, 15, 20. And I thought 15 was a good middle ground. Because I thought 10 was not enough and 20 was too steep. Let me double check. By the time this publishes, I'll know the answer to this. Because I use them today. I use them all the time.
Yeah.
But I believe they say 10 on the side. So, but again, I haven't taken my protractor to them.
Right. Yeah, well, to back you up there, I'm a big fan of using wedges and heel elevation. And in fact, just a few months ago, my clients, who I've mentioned, I think, several times, this is a husband and wife couple here in East Nashville who I've been training for several years now, really got on a big squat kick. And, you know, for a while, we were squatting flat-footed, and they got to parallel, like, no problem. And the husband specifically, as is often the case, he's like, I want to squat more. I want to squat heavier. I want to squat deeper. All that stuff. So I was like, well, let's do an experiment where we elevate your heel. And he was like, oh, isn't that cheating? It's like, well, it's giving you extra ankle range of motion, which is making the squat happen easier.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not making the kettlebell lighter.
Sure.
You know, so it's like we're doing more reps, we're doing heavier reps. This is not cheating. This is actually helping you to work more.
Right.
And work harder. So we elevate the heel, and both husband and wife were like, oh, this feels amazing, this is great. And so now they're squatting machines.
Nice.
You know? So I'm the first one, even though I'm like Mr. Mobility, Mr. Pistol Squat, all this stuff, I'm the first one that will agree with you in the sense that, especially for the vast majority of people, in the interest of just getting more training volume in and not fussing over things that probably don't make a big difference long term, let's elevate the heel and go for it, if someone even needs it in the first place.
Right.
But to specifically address the question of how one should approach ankle mobility, you know, that's a whole rabbit hole in and of itself. Do you even need more? If you can achieve kind of like an ass to grass squat with flat feet, then the answer is you probably don't need to address it at all.
Right.
But if you find yourself like having stiff ankles, or you're an avid lifter and you know that you could benefit from some more ankle mobility, I think a great first place to start is just calf work. Specifically calf stretching. So just hanging your foot off an elevated surface.
Right.
Because I think like the lowest hanging fruit for ankle mobility is probably just tight calves.
I would agree.
So maybe roll your calves a little bit, stretch your calves off an elevated surface, do some stretch to calf raise, you know, kind of like PNF style, I guess you would say. Roll out the sole of your feet, maybe open up some of that plantar fascia. And I think that probably goes, that's like the best, I think, like kitchen sink approach for like most people.
I would agree.
So, and I know like for me, I'm really big on stretching my calves. I may have told this story before, but I was actually at a workshop one time where we were actually working on pressing, overhead pressing, military pressing, and handstand push-ups. And we warmed up, we were doing some progressions and whatnot, and the instructor stopped us, and we took about 5 minutes and just stretched our calves and our feet. And then we went back to the overhead pressing, and pretty much across the board, everybody's presses were smoother, stronger, what have you. So, you know, if you really buy into the whole fascial chain idea, you've got a posterior fascial chain. So if you stretch out your calves, that has an upwards effect. That has a beneficial effect up the chain, so to speak. So whether that was placebo, who knows? But I know that it seems to make a difference. So I've been a big advocate of just stretching one's calves ever since then. And let's be honest, most people who wear shoes all the time and don't really do a lot of deep squatting, deep, you know, like quadruped work where your toes are tucked under and all that stuff. Just like anything else, your feet, your ankles, your calves are probably just tight. So you stretch them out, you move them around, probably doesn't have to be anything too crazy. But calf stretching is kind of like one of the top things that I just kind of hit and check off the list on pretty much every workout. And it doesn't have to take long, you know, 30 seconds per foot, stretch, raise, all that stuff. So from there, if you want to get more fancy with like joint circles and more targeted ankle mobility. I think that has a time and place, especially if someone is like really motivated to do that work and has the time and energy to do it. But the short answer, the kitchen sink approach, is A, if you don't need it, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. And that should be just judged by your, I think, squat range of motion. Mm-hmm. And B, just do some calf stretching. Hmm.
I used to do an ankle mobility drill, and you're probably familiar with it. Either I would do it either standing or like half kneeling. But effectively, I'd be shoes off with my toes about 3, 4, 5 inches away from like a post, like a squat rack post. And I would do like lean in and do like, I don't know what you want to call it, but like, I don't know. Keep my foot flat, heel on the ground, lean in, knee, try to touch the post. Do 3 or 4 down the middle or 12 o'clock. 3 or 4, maybe like 9, 10 o'clock, like to the left of the post. 3 or 4, like 2 or 3 o'clock to the right of the post. Just kind of like working around. Now, I don't know for sure that I was mobilizing the joint so much as I was stretching my soleus or other calf muscle, right?
Well, that also begs the question, what's the difference?
Right, well, right. So what are we actually doing?
quote-unquote mobilizing the joint versus quote-unquote stretching a muscle.
Well, I think if you were to, you know, ask the general fitness lay public, mobilizing is joint specific and stretching is muscle specific. So it's actually, it does matter, the difference.
Sure.
But I couldn't tell you which one I was doing and what it was actually. I think mentally I was like, oh, I'm mobilizing the joint. But in hindsight, you know, years later removed, I couldn't tell you if I was actually mobilizing the joint, like opening up the bones in the joint or whatever, or if I was stretching the tissue of my calf. I don't know. Probably both. I don't know. But I don't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. So I haven't found as much utility in it. Now, occasionally, if I feel like my knees feel a little bit wonky, I'll sometimes, like, I might try it as an intervention to see, like, what happens. But it's pretty rare. It's really rare. And if my knees are really that finicky with, like, a squat variation, I'll either, you know, modify another way or I'll just stop squatting. It's rare that that happens, but occasionally my knees will be a little bit cranky. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to push my luck today. I did squat today, and it was all right. Not my best squat performance all time, but it wasn't bad. Mm-hmm. So, but I didn't do any ankle mobility before.
Right. Yeah.
So, well, you know, the funny thing about the whether you wedge or like prop your heel up or whatever is that if you were to look at most Olympic weightlifter shoes, they have a giant wedge built into the shoe. Like squat shoes have wedges built into them. They're
for good
not
reason.
Flat.
Yeah.
Like, I own a pair of squat shoes. They are not flat shoes. They have a wedge. And I only wear them occasionally. I have them at the gym, and I honestly forget that I have them. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah. Even then, I just use the wedges.
Right. Yeah. So, all that to say, I think, like a lot of things mobility-related, A, it depends on the lifter's specific abilities and restrictions. Mm-hmm. If it's not a problem, don't make it a problem. That's my biggest, you know, we've talked about this. That's my biggest gripe with certain factions of the fitness industry is just inventing problems.
Right.
Making something a problem that's not a problem. So ankle mobility is a good example of that. And I'm the first one to admit, like, I'm a big nerd when it comes to foot training. Like, I do toe drills, I do ankle drills, I do calf stretches, and, you know, all this other stuff. You know, wrote a whole book on pistol squat, and half of it is progressions that help to open up the ankle and all that other good stuff. But, yeah, at the end of the day, you have to assess benefit cost-benefit ratio.
Right.
Cost-benefit analysis. You know, if you've got 45 minutes to really train, it only takes 10 seconds to bring out the wedges.
Right.
And away you go.
Right.
I will say, it is funny, I have gotten this feedback from a couple clients that their shoe size has gone up after a few years of working out with me.
What?
Yeah. Have I never mentioned that?
No, why?
These people specifically wear toe spacers when they train.
Okay.
We also do basically all of our workouts barefoot.
Okay.
We do toe exercises, foot exercises. I don't really know anything else specific besides that.
Huh.
But specifically, one man in his 50s and one gal in her 30s have both reported that they've gone up at least half a shoe size.
Huh. That's wild.
Could be a coincidence. Could be anything. But I just think that's always kind of funny.
Huh. That's really interesting, actually.
So yeah, that's foot mobility. And this Instagram question also asked what my thoughts were on banded distractions, like for ankles.
Right.
And I've tried them. I've done them. I've like banded the ankle doing, I think, basically the drill that you were describing, where you plant your foot down and you just drive your knee forward.
Right.
To the inside, to the outside, that whole thing. And it does feel like it gives you an extra stimulus in the stretch, so to speak. But again, I don't think it's really worth doing for most people to like set the band up and do the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I never really got much out of it. And I never really adopted it as a strategy in my programming. I just never quite got the science behind it. Like, it's supposed to like pull your joint into a better position. I don't know. But in any case, someone on the internet followed up and said that some recent studies have shown that it doesn't actually seem to do anything according to the latest science, the latest studies. So I feel somewhat vindicated in that. It always just seemed like a little bit of CrossFit voodoo to like band up your joints and
right.
do your stretching, and I don't know.
Right.
I never really got it.
And also, if you really think about it, like from an outside perspective, if you're using a band to like reorient joints, it just sounds like...
Sounds fishy.
It does. I don't think your joints are that so far out of whack that you gotta like move them around with a band. And if your joints are that lax, then we probably have other problems that we need to address or whatever.
Yeah.
So like using a band to like reorient an ankle structure sounds kind of insane.
Yeah.
And also makes it like the human body sound like really flimsy. Like we can reorient joints and organs or whatever. Like, I don't know. It just seems like, to your point, it just doesn't seem, it seems more like voodoo, whatever.
Yeah.
And so.
It may have benefit in some other way that I just have never heard of or that I don't understand. But it, and again, may or may not be worth doing. But it's like the same thing with foam rolling, is the shorthand version that a lot of trainers will use to communicate with clients. So they'll say like, you know, the foam roller will, you know, somehow release or open up or restructure your fascia. And it's like, well, that's definitely not true. And like the classic example that I've heard a bunch of times is like, if your muscle and connective tissue was that easy to manipulate, you would have a flat butt from just sitting down. after 8 hours. You know, it's like you stand up and it's like, okay, you might, you know, your butt might be a little bit tight, but
like a human Play-Doh.
Yeah, but you're not exactly Play-Doh. So now that doesn't mean that like there's no benefit to foam rolling, but it's just like the mechanism by which it's communicated, I think, by, I don't want to say lazy personal trainers, but maybe trainers who are not nerds, like, you know, maybe we are. They just kind of say these things, or they parrot things that they hear on Instagram or the internet and stuff like that. So, not to say there's no benefit in foam rolling, not to say there's no benefit in banded distraction work or any other, like, mobility methods, but I don't know. At the end of the day, it's like, the classic thing that we talk about all the time is the juice worth the squeeze?
Yeah, and again, going back to the original question, like, do you do any ankle mobility? I just don't, my clients are paying for my time and expertise, and I don't think that I have the time. Time aside, I don't think I really have the, like, I'm going to put, like, air quotes, but I hope the audience understands, like, the professional authority to be like, oh, we're mobilizing and moving these joints. I don't know. I can't confirm those claims. So instead of being like, oh, well, let's do some ankle mobility where I don't actually know for sure that we're doing any good, I would rather wedge my people and load them up and make their squat look better and feel better and know that we are actually doing some positive good with their training, with their fitness, with their health, whatever. So it's difficult for me to argue for spending 10 or 15 minutes working on joint mobility when I don't know for sure that whatever we're doing is actually doing any good. But I do know that squatting is doing really good. So whatever we need to do to get to a good-looking, comfortable squat, I'm going to do that. That's going to be my intervention. It's not going to be a joint mobility drill. It's going to be wedging the feet, maybe, you know, toeing out, you know, widening, changing the stance, changing the width of the stance, stuff like that. I'm going to do that as my intervention before I'm going to be like, oh, come over here and do this ankle mobility drill or put this band around your ankle.
Take it from the guy with the biggest quads and the second strongest squat at the bar.
Not at this bar, yes, but at Gym 5, no. I was there earlier. Our guy that would do the hack squat and the walking lunge, he was there.
Oh,
that
boy.
Fucking guy.
You can't mess with that guy.
Not only that, he had his band with him again.
Uh-huh.
And
he was doing
like
Nordics?
Band-assisted hack squat and band-assisted back squat.
Assisted or resisted?
Assisted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That was the only part that I thought was kind of peculiar because he's a pretty fit dude. And he was doing like 225 back squat with bands tied to the pull-up bar.
Yeah.
So assisted out of the hole.
Okay.
And I was like, buddy, I'm pretty certain you're more jacked and tan than that.
Yeah.
And then he added the band to the hack squat at some point. Anyway, this dude's big. He's a big dude. But I don't know. Maybe he's just going for volume.
Hey, you know what? If it's the same guy that I'm thinking about, you know, more power to him.
Well, and remember, the last time we saw him, he was doing walking lunges with, like, 65s in his hands. So
yeah.
He's not small.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you're... Of course, I always, like, raise an eyebrow when I see that kind of thing going on, where it's like, are you trying to do some, like, bootleg conjugate West Side shenanigans?
Probably.
But if you're... If your max is more than respectable and your quads are more than respectable, then, hey, you won't get any harassment from me on the podcast.
Right.
This is as close as it gets.
Yeah.
So, moving along.
Moving along. Tangent sidebar. I keep looking over your shoulder because there's a golden retriever that's really cute. But he or she, I can't tell, was doing this very adorable thing with the owner where he or she would, it's a woman that's the dog's owner, bestie, whatever. And the dog, I guess, either for fun or for comfort, kept putting its paw in the owner's hand. And the owner just had her hand like back here by her back pocket, like holding the dog's paw. It's really cute. It was very cute. It's been kind of distracting how cute this dog is.
I've noticed you've been distracted.
Yeah, it's a cute dog. But I just thought that was adorable. I think the dog was just like flustered that he or she wasn't getting attention. So just putting the paw in the owner's hand, like the owner was literally just like this. But it's, it was cute. So, all right, anyway, back to fitness. It was adorable. This is why you should get a dog. With your schedule, maybe not get a dog. Maybe get a cat.
I'm not opposed to a cat. I don't mind cats.
Don't get a lizard or a snake. That's... Don't do that.
I'm past my lizard phase. I had lizards growing up.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you had horses growing up, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Horses and lizards.
Horses, lizards, turtles, cats, dogs. We had a cow. We had a pony.
How long did your lizards live?
Not very long.
How long did your frogs live? Did you say frogs or turtles? You said turtles.
Turtles.
No frogs.
I don't think I ever had a frog.
Turtles live quite a while, don't they?
Yeah, I think I had a little, like, pink turtle for a while. Then I just let it go.
You let it go?
Yeah.
Like, in the wild?
Yeah, in a pond.
What if it's still there?
It could be. It could be a, could be like a 25-year-old turtle.
Dude,
at this point.
I shit you not, when I was a kid, I used to fish in this creek near my house. And on very, very rare, I fished a lot, but on very rare occasions, probably I fished a ton in that creek. Probably two or three times, which is an absurd amount of times, I saw a goldfish swimming with like the bluegill in this creek that I fished. I shit you not.
A goldfish.
They're very easy to spot.
Yeah, no kidding.
You're like, wild. What? And it was like a big, like it bit, like it had like grown up with the other bluegill or whatever.
Whoa.
Like a ridiculously big goldfish.
Wow.
I guess someone flushed it or threw it in the creek or I don't know.
A goldfish in the wild.
Yeah. So anyway.
That would be cool if goldfish were like actually flourished in the wild.
Well, but that's the point. Is
that'd
like
be fun
that's
to see.
Why you don't release pet animals into the wild.
Because they take over.
They can't. Well, either they're an invasive species or they can't fend for themselves because they don't know how. They've never had to.
Yeah.
So like that's why they'll probably like die.
Yeah.
So anyway. All right, back to fitness.
Back to fitness.
You asked me a question earlier. What was the question?
I don't think you were paying attention.
The most rewarding thing about training at our age now or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that it?
That's the gist of it.
It's going to be kind of a vain answer, but truthfully, the most rewarding thing about training now is at least for, like, I'm going to put it this way. I don't think that my physique is 100% on point right now. But for me to, like, get it there would be a matter of, like, 3 to 6 months. Whereas, like, I thought about this today. Actually, you know, this is a really good topic. I thought about this today because I was thinking about, like, managing expectations. And you follow David Delanove, right?
Not closely.
Okay, well, he had a post on his Instagram the other day, and I messaged him about it, but he was talking about a couple of reasons why he got out of fitness. And the way he explained it was that what we sell as coaches, the product that we sell, is not what people want. They want the end result. They want to look good, feel good, be like, you know, Sports Illustrated cover model ready, whatever. It takes a lot of fucking work to get there. You and I both know that. So when you bring on someone who's never really been there, or it's about managing expectations, right? Like, you kind of have to be like, look, it takes, this isn't like a 6-week, 12-week, 16-week transformation, unless you were to be ridiculous in your behaviors, like training and eating, like it's your job, like your life depended on it. This is like a several year process. And so it's just managing those expectations. I will admit, at my age now, I'm at a fitness level that if I wanted to like look good, feel good with my shirt off, it would be like a 3 to 6 month endeavor. In other words, I've banked my time. I've done it. I've done the reps. I've done the sets. I've done the workouts. I've done the weeks, months, years. Am I as big and as lean or what jacked and tan as I could possibly ever be? No. But I'm pretty close, I guess. I'm in the ballpark. So that's what I appreciate now about my training, is that for me to like ratchet it up, it's not that big of a difference in my lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not overhauling my life in order to do that. I'm right. Making some subtle changes and then going really hard in those small changes, and that typically does well for me. So I like that I'm at that level now. You know, 15 years ago, I would not look like this. I don't think that I look that great. But the point being, 15 years ago, this would have been a lot more effort to be this level.
Right, right.
And now I kind of just exist at it. And then I can kind of like, you know, dial a couple things in and things just work.
Yeah.
But yeah, it took 15 fucking years to get there.
Right.
So, or at least 10. I'd say 10. It took me 10 years.
Sure.
Five of which, maybe even more, of like probably terrible training and right. certainly terrible dietary habits. But yeah, anyway.
So you're saying that your favorite part is just the fact that you can basically exist in maintenance mode and exist in close to your final form.
Yes, I would argue that.
Yeah.
Like, if the finish line is, you know, if starting is 0% and the finish line is 100%, I can exist at like 75, 80%.
Right.
And then I can ratchet it up if I want to. But it's really hard to fall back. I mean, at this point in my life, like, everything's so set, and like, I'm set in my ways now.
Yeah.
That it would take a lot of effort to like regress immensely.
Yeah.
It'd be a monumental effort to regress immensely.
Right.
So, yeah, I just feel like I'm at a good, like, cruising 70 miles an hour down the interstate. I'm not in the fast lane. I don't got anywhere to be, but if I wanted to be there, just move on over, turn it up a notch, get there.
You might have to get behind the wheel of your green 4Runner if you want to get in the fast lane.
It's not fast. It's not a good analogy. You need to get in your Tesla. That's
because,
fast.
Because I saw that you drove the old... The old red girl, which is a perfect, hey, it's perfect for cruising down to the old East Nashville Beer Works on
a Monday night, but
on a nice, cool Monday night. But
yeah, if you got anywhere to be, don't take that one.
Yeah. But it's fun to ride in nonetheless. I would say the overall sentiment of what you just said is the same for me. Like, at this point in my life, it's kind of a fun, I'm not going to lie, maybe a vain perspective of your life, where you're like, I've put in the years of effort, and I can maintain a strength level, a physique level, a physicality level that's far above the norm, above the average,
mm-hmm.
That I just live at. Like, it's not a big deal for me to go in and train. I mean, listen, man, to give you and I a little bit of credit, even in Gym 5, we're not nothing.
Right.
You know? It's like, yeah, there's some monsters in there that we have aspirations to keep up with.
Sure.
But even, like, compared to the average, like, Gym 5 goer, We're setting the bar pretty high in terms of how we train. And that feels good. That feels good to be able to roll in on a Sunday morning when you're hungover. and just be able to sling weight, work hard, put it in, and be in the top, you now. Top tiny percent of the general population, and above average even in like a hardcore lifting gym.
Right.
Like that feels good on a Sunday morning when you're hungover. Ask me how I know. Ask me how I know. Andy and I took a trip to the liquor store on Saturday.
Yeah, and you walked out. You walked out with tequila.
I walked out with tequila.
Walked out with beer.
Yeah.
I'll put it this way: I came home from my day out watching football with many fewer beers.
I can imagine. You had some great beers: some pumpkin beers, some fall beers.
Some pumpkin beer, fall beer. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I got some Haha tequila. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All this to say, so I very much resonate with that idea, that sentiment of just like, okay, we've put in the work, and obviously our health, our strength, our physicality is a priority for us, for our families, for our longevity, for ourselves, for the people that we take care of, that we live with. You as a new dad, like, that's a huge thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, now you have, like, a full-fledged family to take care of. So all that goes a long way. The training itself, it's very interesting. It's a little hard to convey, but to put it very, very simply, I just find training fun. Like, even if I'm not setting PRs, breaking records, it's fun. It's fun to go in and voluntarily put in, like, hard effort, because I think, now that I'm saying this out loud, I think what I try to do is I try to kind of shorten this whole, like, dopamine cycle, where it's like, speaking to your point, most people, they walk into the gym day one, and they want to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and it's a five-year process. So the reward cycle is 5 years long.
Right.
Me, I think to myself, I am going to do this rep. I'm going to perform this singular repetition. And I do the repetition. And to me, that reward cycle is that long. So to me, I get the dopamine response, the reward cycle, I get that 5 to 20 times a set. So that's kind of the way that I think about it.
I like that.
You know, it's a little bit of like self brainwashing. It's like, I am going to, it comes down to like focus. Focus, drive, intensity, whatever you want to call it. But the simplest way that I could put it is like, I mentally tell myself I'm going to do this thing, and then I do it, and that's its own intrinsic reward.
To piggyback off that, I was telling you off air that I went to train at Gym 5 right before we came here. And I did not want to go. I was like, man, I just want to take the afternoon off. I think I'm at that stage now, and this was not always the case, because, and people automatically imagine this because I'm a fitness professional and I own a gym. Everyone thinks that I love training, like love it. I like training. I don't love training. I loved skateboarding. I had a passion for skateboarding. At some point in my life, I probably had a passion for fitness, but I wouldn't call it that anymore. Training to me, I don't want to call it a chore because that sounds like something that I have to do, but I don't want to do. Training to me is I feel about it like I do brushing my teeth. Mm-hmm. There are some days, like some, let's say some nights when I'm very sleepy and I would love to just hop in bed, just go to sleep. I still brush my teeth because I know it's good for me. And then I know the next morning when I wake up, I'll feel better having known I brushed my teeth than skipping it. So I brush my teeth. It takes a couple minutes. Training to me some days is kind of like brushing my teeth, where I would, you know what, I'd rather sit at home and watch TV, or I'd rather go on a walk, or I'd rather do something else, but I know that the next day I'm gonna feel better having known I did it. So I go and do it, punch the clock. So it's not so much that I go and I'm like, you know, smacking my head into the wall, like, about training. But I've gotten to a level now where I can appreciate the task for just what it is, a challenge. And not just that, like today, and we've talked about this a couple times, when I walked into Gym 5, I didn't have a plan. I was like, it's a lower body day. So I walked in and I was like, what am I feeling once I get there? And I got a pretty decent workout. It was leg curls, front squats, single leg RDLs, and sled drag, sled push to finish out. Not the most epic workout of all time, but it was a decent workout. And I think that's another point, like not just the fact that workouts are more like tasks that I get to check the box, is that I'm much more relaxed and calm about what it is I'm going to do. And I'm okay with, I'll say it, an average workout. It doesn't have to be this like epic battle, this fight, this slog or whatever. It's just, let's punch the clock. Let's put some weight on the bar. Let's move. Let's have some fun. Enjoy the process. Decent workout. I don't have to be like puking in the bathroom to realize that I did good work.
Yeah.
You know, it was a good workout. I punched the clock. I did the thing. And I'm okay with that. I'm at a level in my life where I'm okay with that. I don't have an ego about it anymore. I don't have like PRs I gotta set. I can just go in and enjoy the process of feeling weight against my body and being okay with that, whatever that is. I'm not saying that everyone should live there, but it's like this zen-like quality, if you will, where I'm like, you know what? This looks good, feels good. This is hard enough for today, and it's pushing me towards where I want to be. I'm okay with that. It's good. All good. So I just kind of have this very calm, collect mode about it. So yeah.
There's a Zen saying that goes something along the lines of, before enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. This has been the A to Z No BS Show. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next time.
Goodbye.